You're on the Front Porch, where we tackle tough issues facing West Virginia and Appalachia like you and your friends do on your front porch. So, the GOP tax plan has passed and is law. It's a good time to talk about how West Virginia may be affected by changes in the GOP federal tax plan. I'm Scott Finn, Grand Poobah here at West Virginia Public Broadcasting, and joining us, as always, is Rick Wilson, our progressive host from the American Friends Service Committee. Hey, Rick.
Hey there.
And from the free market right, it's Jesse Troyan, a PhD economist who works with the Free Market Cardinal Institute here in Charleston, West Virginia. Hey, Jesse, how's it going?
It's going well. How about you?
We are good. We're good to go because we're talking about taxes. We love tax talk here. This is what we're all about. We lean into our nerdiness. By the way, the Front Porch is sponsored by the Charleston Gazette-Mail, using its CGM app to deliver the latest in news, traffic, and weather alerts. Download the CGM app at iTunes or Google Play. So, Rick, you like this thing, right? This is going to be great for West Virginia, in your opinion.
Yeah, it's so good. We're just going to curl up and die, Scott. Yeah, it's awesome. So, if you go back to the last decade when Bush pushed through his massive tax cuts, we got permanent prosperity. Oh, wait, there was something else that happened, wasn't there? Like the worst crash since the Great Depression.
An important flip side to that is, what are the associated spending cuts? There's some serious soul searching that needs to be done on what are the things that we're spending at the government level.
Money, say, oh, golly, we don't have enough money. It's a Trojan horse that'll be used to push through cutting things like Medicare, Medicaid, SNAP, student aid, and things like that. It's like, golly, we have a deficit suddenly. Well, gee, reckon, wonder how we got that. And it's just going to be used as an excuse to cut all those things.
Yeah, the GOP isn't even fighting this part. They're already talking about the need to tackle Medicaid, which is the federal health care program for the elderly, disabled, and poor. It's Medicare, which is the federal health care program for the elderly, and it's Social Security and discretionary spending on top of everything else. So are you saying, Jesse, that that does need to be tackled?
The easiest thing to think about with these is the magnitude of these programs. Of course, they're going to become an easy target. If I make a relatively small percentage cut in this budget in real numbers, it's going to have a pretty large impact.
So it's like we're going to cut off your leg, Scott, and then say, you're not a very good runner. You know, it's a setup, obviously, you know. The scope and scale is $1.5 trillion of cuts, again, that are going to go. Like, the cuts are going to go to middle-class people are temporary. The cuts are going to go to corporations and the wealthy are permanent. Just shows how lopsided it is.
Let me say two things. One, I think the argument of lower rates, fewer loopholes for business is a good argument in general. One of the questions being raised about the current plan lowers rates for corporations, but also leaves a lot of these so-called loopholes or tax breaks, however you want to say it, in there. So the effective corporate tax rate won't just be the newer lower rate. It would also be even lower than that again, because the effective tax rate is the tax rate minus all these deductions that businesses get to take. They could have done this in a way that did away with some tax breaks for corporations and lowered the rates to make an even playing field, which I think is the Cardinal Institute's general attitude toward these things.
Well, yeah, Scott, I think you represented Cardinal very fairly. What we would love to see happen is lower rates that apply to everybody, that these carve-outs, these exemptions, these loopholes, these special deductions are not a thing. I think it's better than what we currently have. I think as anybody who has worked in politics, policy, or economics for even a short amount of time is going to tell you, we can discuss ideals all we want, but we have to deal with the world as it currently exists.
Well, I mean, the evidence suggests that after about 10 years, people in West Virginia are going to be paying more than they did before, average people. Also, the University of Chicago did a poll of economists about this, and most of them didn't think it would improve the economy, but there was universal agreement about blowing up the deficit.
Well, in West Virginia is a state that has a disproportionate amount of federal spending going on per capita. We get almost, I think, more than twice as much money coming back from the federal government than we send to the federal government. And things like Medicare, Medicaid, if those things are cut because of the tax cuts, is it possible the country will do better, but West Virginia will do poorer? That's my question.
I think a small group of people in the country will do better.
I think anything that is going to leave more money in the pockets of West Virginians on every paycheck, I think that on net, that's good for West Virginia.
So what happens when for example, Medicaid gets cut and all of a sudden there's less funding going to the state's hospitals and doctors who rely on Medicaid for a lot of their money.
I think if these cuts are going to have such wide-ranging and very drastic effects, once again, we need to do some soul searching about what is going on with the current healthcare system in West Virginia.
In general, Rick, this is something I hear all the time among lower middle class people, working class people who see folks around them who are in poverty and think that the answer is not Medicaid. The problem is Medicaid. The answer is not food stamps. The problem is food stamps.
First of all, why are we willing to put up the amount of poverty that we have in this place? For the other thing, look at the quality of jobs that people have. They don't. Wage job quality has gone down. The kind of wages they pay has gone down. Health coverage has gone down. People are less likely to have real pensions, sick days, paid vacation, and everything else.
Well, the resentment, I think, is among people that do have jobs. And some of them even depend on some of these programs, too. But you still hear them talk about how they don't like that.
Yeah, I think that's the kind of thing's been manufactured. I think it's like sort of the divide and rule thing that worked really well in the American South and in Central Europe and wherever else. Like, you know, if you're poor and white, your problems are the black people. If you're a peasant, your problems are the Jews. You know, it's really easy to displace. And that really benefits the elite and the wealthy.
So. Well, what about this idea that West Virginians in particular, we're individualistic people. We like to see ourselves as self-reliant. And I think that idea of ourselves is in direct conflict with the fact that we are one of the most dependent states on Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, and these other benefit programs from the federal government. There's a conflict there that psychologically people have a lot of trouble dealing with.
Well, people also have a tradition of taking care of each other, of solidarity here. This people in this state have sacrificed a lot for the good of the country.
True, just taking care of each other, but is that relying on Washington, D.C. to take care of you is still not, I don't know if that's solidarity.
It's democracy. So if you really want to go there and dismantle everything and have a total oligarchy, which is the direction I really think we're going in, let's see how it works. If you really want to go there, just be willing to own it.
This is a fundamental debate at the end of the day about poverty. And in West Virginia, we know poverty. We see it every day. You're not isolated from it. It is around the corner. I woke up this morning at 3:00. There was an explosion at a house that was 2 blocks away from us down the hill. Heard it, went to the window, huge fire. Who knows what it is? I mean, but that didn't happen when I was living in an upper middle class neighborhood in Florida, in Tampa, in suburban Tampa. That is the second time this month I've had, within a block of my house, I've had emergency vehicles in the middle of the night. So we know poverty. And familiarity, in this case, I think breeds contempt. Instead of people feeling like, oh, I feel so sorry for those people who had their house explode, I kind of feel fear. I'm suspicious about what might have caused it, and that's not fair. I have no idea. The sort of the answer that people have come up with, a lot of folks, has been that the medicine that was given to us, starting with the Great Society, was government funding, federal funding. And it's undeniable that a lot of that federal funding has lifted people out of the most abject forms of poverty. At least people are less likely to be starving and without health care than they did back in the 50s and 60s when Kennedy came to McDowell County. That's one argument. But then the other argument is the medicine is actually causing us to be sicker. It's causing us to be dependent. It's causing us to not have the work ethic we used to have. So I think that's like the basic West Virginia question.
A lot of these programs, a lot of these different forms of assistance, I have no firsthand knowledge of. But continually looking to government, some sort of outside bureaucrat, whether it's somebody in Mingo or McDowell County looking to Charleston for a solution, or it's anybody throughout West Virginia looking to D.C. for them to solve our problems, that's going to lead to a lot of the results that we see. We see a lot of one so-called one-size-fits-all solutions that don't do a very good job of fitting, that we need to do more of local solutions to local problems, different community associations, need to take back on the accountability of helping our neighbors and not being so quick to abdicate our own responsibilities in our communities to some outside power that's going to come in and quote unquote save us all.
Okay, Rick, you get the last word here.
So I think basically it's a question of what kind of government we're going to have. It's going to be democratic or not. And I think it's a myth that conservatives want less government and progressives want more. I think both of them want to use the government. They want to use it for different objectives. One wants to use it to transfer wealth upward, and the other wants to use it to keep more of it for the middle and the lower. Both of them use it. It's hypocritical to think that's not the case.
I think conservatives of conscience would say they're trying to grow the pie. And yeah, if the upper echelons get even more of that pie, does it really matter if everyone's seeing a growing pie? The working class doesn't mind to see people get rich, but what they resent is when they feel like the system's rigged against us, we don't even have a chance anymore. We can do everything right and we still get screwed. That's when you really start to see negative effects.
I think you've hit on a very important point here. It's the chance to make your own living and get rich if your idea is good enough for it. And it's what are the rules that you have to play by. And present day, as we were talking about in the tax the new tax bill, all of these loopholes and exemptions, that reads as a who's who of who's got friends in high places. And so I think that's where a lot of the contempt probably breeds from.
Okay, Rick, what's your words of wisdom for this week?
How about Lincoln? The legitimate object of government is to do for a community of people whatever they need to have done but cannot do at all or cannot do as well for themselves in their separate and individual capacities.
And that is The Front Porch. I'm Scott Finn, Executive Director of West Virginia Public Broadcasting. We are joined by our special guest host, Jesse Troyan, PhD economist working for the Free Market Cardinal Institute here in Charleston, West Virginia. Thank you, Jesse.
Thanks for having me again.
And Rick Wilson, our progressive guru from the American Friends Service Committee, dispensing wisdom from his farm up what creek? I can't believe I don't even know this.
It's anonymous. It's an undisclosed location. It's a bunker somewhere.
You don't want all your fans and all your devotees to come tracking you down somewhere in rural Milton.
Or someplace like that.
Or someplace like that even. Even that is too much information.
He's capturing the true Appalachian spirit of wanting to be left alone and to do his thing.
Just go to Milton and listen for the goats, and you will find Rick Wilson. I'm Scott Finn, proudly on the west side of Charleston. I appreciate you listening. Take care.